The day's top stories, the best bets, and Jason Page. This is the Cash In Early Edition.
All right, away we go with a Thursday edition of the show. I am Jason Page. Good to have you with us. Cash In on this Thursday, September 28th, 2023. Subscribe to the podcast. Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Music, whatever. iHeartRadio. With you Monday through Friday, noon to 1 p.m. Eastern. The video stream available on X at the back page. On Twitch, JasonPage77. YouTube and Facebook, just look for the Cash In with Jason Page. Sam Yarnell coming up in a little bit. Kurt Heelan will join us. We don't normally do two guests on the pod, but I just had to do it today. Kurt Heelan, pro basketball talk at NBCSports.com, will swing by, talk about the Damian Lillard deal. But we open it up with some college football today on the show, and happy to do that with our good friend Bill Bender of the Sporting News stops by the show. To get into it with us a little bit on the college football. And normally I get you on Monday and we're talking about, you know, recapping the weekend. I want to do some of that, but I also want to look ahead a little bit. You were in South Bend, I guess, for Notre Dame and Ohio State. What a game between those two teams. And Ryan Day's team figures out a way to win it late. I just can't for the life of me figure out how, if you're Notre Dame, you have two plays with only 10 players on the field. That's mind-numbing to me. That an entire coaching that nobody caught that to me is just crazy.
Yeah, and you know that's one that Notre Dame's going to have to live with for a long time. I was in it there in South Bend, Catholic kid from Ohio. It's like that's one of those dream games for me to be able to cover. And Jason, that stadium was ready to erupt. I mean, this would have been their biggest win in 30 years. I'm not exaggerating. I mean, that it would have been like Florida State number one level type victory. And you know, to Ryan Day's credit, one, they ran the football because that game was all about short yardage plays that for good and bad. And number two, everything that happened after overshadowed the game because we're in the press conference and Ryan Day's launching into Lou Holtz. So I generally celebrate my victories by launching into an 86-year-old man. But, you know, it is what it is. And I think some of it, Lou Holtz made it personal when he said Ryan Day by name.
Yeah.
And the theory going around here and by some others right now is that Ryan Day vented some of that Michigan frustration out on Notre Dame, which I think is pretty accurate, honestly.
I got to say, I love the quarterback, the young quarterback at Ohio State. He made some big plays in that game late. That kid's got some moxie.
Yeah, and he got it done in the clutch and, you know, makes a big third down throw, big fourth down throw to Julian Fleming, third down throw to Mecca to get it down to the one. And, you know, I've been pointing out to people all along. So Ohio State's last three quarterbacks, all first-round guys, Stroud, Haskins, Fields, their last three guys that won a national championship are guys named Rex Kern. He's from my hometown. That's why I know that, 1968. Craig Krenzel, who was very same MO, right?
Yeah.
Not pretty, not flashy, got it done. And then Cardale Jones, who stepped in for Barrett. And so, yes, that's my way of saying Kyle McCord is 100% capable of leading Ohio State in this roster and this improved defense to a national championship.
I saw something weird at the end of the game, and I tweeted it out on X, whatever you do these days on X. I tweeted it out. As they were all celebrating on the sideline, there was a shot of Kyle and some guys on the sideline. And in the background, sitting on the bench, this is after the touchdown, where everybody's going nuts, Marvin Harrison III's just sitting there. And he had this sullen look on his face, like somebody just kicked his dog. And I can't for the life of me figure out if I was just reading too much into it, or if in that moment, when everybody was so happy, he just wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, that's maybe, yeah, I didn't catch that. That's a good observation. I mean, I remember his dad was not one for emotion, Marvin Harrison, and maybe that's the thing. He did make a huge catch on that drive.
He did.
Obviously, there was a scare with his ankle. You know, this was a good time for Ohio State to have a bye week, number one, again, for his injury and some other things. But two, now we got to wait all the way till Monday to hear Ryan Day's response to Lou Holtz's response to the response of the game. And this thing will have at least one more headline to it. You know how the media works. You've been in this as long as I have. And it it takes a life of its own. And that was one. And then, of course, the other was in Eugene, Oregon. Because here, I'll just throw this at you real quick. Mm-hmm. Everything Dan Lanning said, I would say to my team. And I coach a lot of youth sports, and you got to find motivational tactics. I get it. I just would have done it with the cameras off. Why give Colorado that spotlight when you were going to beat them like that anyway?
I just keep saying this. I'm sorry. The dude is putting a bullseye on his team's back. If your job as a head coach, and I'm not going to talk about the X's and O's and all that stuff. In fact, their defense is hot garbage. Their offensive line stinks. All right, fine, all of that. But as a head coach, your job is to put your team in the best possible position to succeed. There is no way anybody can convince me, Bill, that putting your team in the best position to succeed includes giving bulletin board material or acting in such a way, even after the loss to Oregon, getting up in the press conference and saying, hey, you better get us now because it's not going to get any worse than this. Right. If I'm Caleb Williams in USC, I'm saying, oh, hell yeah, it's about to get a whole lot worse. Oh. And it's going to happen on your home field.
Right. I totally agree. And I, you know, with all these coaches doing this, and this became a big story Saturday, whether it was that or Jake Dickert overreacting to a throwaway comment by Lee Corso. That tells me a couple things. These coaches have rabbit ears.
Yeah.
How many times have you been in a press conference or heard a coach say, you know, we're focused on within, we're focused on ourselves, the old John Wooden thing? 100% not if you're listening to the media. And I do, it's one thing again, and just with my kids in general and coaching, and I'm by no means an FBS coach, but I always tell our kids, we don't worry about what the other parents are doing, the other team. We worry about ourselves. And I think that's going by the wayside a little bit. But you know who stayed within himself last week? Nick Saban. Mm-hmm. He didn't fall into the Lane Kiffin trap. And what did they do? They went out and beat them 24-10 and made Ole Miss look very ordinary.
Yeah, they certainly did. How much go back to USC and Colorado this weekend? Could it be worse than Oregon?
You know what? Maybe. Because they're going to have trouble stopping USC, but on
they have trouble stopping anybody, Bill.
Right. I think they're going to score a couple points though. USC, when they played San Jose State, even they gave up a couple big plays. I think they got to protect Shador. There's going to be a lot made of this quarterback battle between Caleb and Shador, obviously. But Caleb Williams is like, and I hate using this phrase, low key playing unbelievable football. Like 1,200 yards. 15 touchdowns, no interceptions. Congratulations. That's the first time I've said low-key on the air. he is fabulous. And I think if he has a huge game here, it will reaffirm. Michael Penix is the betting favorite for the Heisman right now, but I think Caleb's going to take that back on Saturday.
Yeah, I agree with you. And boy, talk about a game flying under the radar this weekend, because we're talking about all these different games, and obviously Colorado and USC is getting a lot of attention. This Utah-Oregon State game, all of a sudden, I mean, I don't know who before the season might have had this one circled on their calendar, but that's going to be a fun game this weekend.
Stoked. I mean, Friday night, that's a good one to watch. You always like having one on while you're doing things Friday night,
yeah,
getting ready for Saturday. And I mean, you know, the big question is Cam Rising play? He's been splitting reps in practice this week. Utah just keeps, for all this talk about flair and flash and press conferences, Utah might be the most boring, awesome team in the country. You know, to beat UCLA 14-7, their defense is elite.
But you can bank on them every year losing one game they're not supposed to lose,
right,
and shooting themselves in the foot and not winding up in the playoff picture. Every year.
Typically a road game.
Yeah.
And that's why this is intriguing. I mean, they're almost untouchable at home at this point. And this could be that game. Now Oregon's backed into a corner. Should be a lot of fun watching that one. I got Utah in the game. I picked against them against Florida in week one against the spread. I've learned my lesson. I'm going to roll with the Utes until they lose.
Give Kansas any shot against Texas?
I'm intrigued because they've got a good running game. They've got two running backs that average combined 7 yards per carry. They've got Jalen Daniels. They've got this. They got routed last year, obviously, and it got away from them. But I think with Daniels on the field, they could make that interesting. That's one of two in that slot. They're a 17-point dog that I think can hang around. And the other one is their good buddy Nebraska that is at home against Michigan, who hasn't played a road game, who's kind of just not really looking bad, but like just slogging through it a little bit. And I know Michigan, their last two trips to Memorial Stadium haven't been pretty. So that could be a little bit closer than it looks.
LSU and Ole Miss. And essentially, you're talking about somebody's season ending this week. I mean, you know, fifth game of the season, one of these teams is done after this week.
Yeah, and that puts the urgency on that when LSU's gone, lost three of the last five there. I think the separator is Jaden Daniels, though, the quarterback play. They're able to go down there. Ole Miss, Jackson Dart has played well, but they looked ordinary last week. Alabama had 10 tackles for loss, 5 sacks in that game. Dallas Turner was amazing. So the pressure's on Lane. Again, you know, we love when coaches jaw a little bit and put themselves out there, but then, like I tell everybody, you got to be willing to live with the consequences. The consequences for Ole Miss could be he poked the bear 2 weeks ago, and all of a sudden they've got two losses and are probably out of SEC West contention.
Notre Dame and Duke, I mean, coming, you know, full circle from where we started this conversation, you know, with Notre Dame and Duke, and you know, Duke has been this surprise, I guess, at 4-0, you know, ranked 17th in the country. I've asked you this before about the staying power of Duke. You know, we saw what they did, obviously, against UConn. That's clubbing baby seals. Give me some thoughts on this matchup with Duke at home, College Game Day going there and all of that.
Big spot for them, obviously, and Riley Leonard, you know, a dual-threat quarterback making a lot of plays. And Wallace Wade Stadium, I mean, I lived down in Charlotte for 7 years. That's wild to think of that being the epicenter of college football for 1 week. It really depends on Notre Dame to me, which Notre Dame shows up. Is it the one? Because I've read stories all the way into Wednesday from players such as Joe Alt and Audric Estime talking about the hangover from last Saturday. Now they got to refocus because last year when Ohio State beat them, they turned around and lost to Marshall. So they can't do that here. Mike Elko, really good underdog, 6-1 against the spread as an underdog. So I'd ultimately think Notre Dame wins this game. It's probably uncomfortable quarters. And they'll still be in the playoff mix if they do. Now, if they lose, you know, what the narrative on Freeman's going to change a little bit because they'll be already out of the playoff hunt.
Last one before I let you go, the Mel Tucker situation. Are we talking about a prolonged battle here with him trying to get his money, them saying they fired him for cause and just sort of the way this plays out?
Yeah, maybe. And it's ugly, and it's not good. They're going to want that to go away because they're trying to bring in another coach. And as you look at that coaching search, which hasn't really begun in earnest and probably won't until we get into November, they got to find a no frills, no sizzle type coach. No, Mel Tucker was kind of not that. And, you know, when they hired Mark D'Antonio, that's the hire I'm talking about. Nobody said, wow, they got Mark D'Antonio. And he turned out to win 3 Big Ten championships and dominated Michigan to some extent and even got him to the playoffs. So Chris Klieman was kind of the guy I thought, but I heard on Sirius yesterday, he said he's not interested in the job. They need to find somebody in that vein, somebody that can coach like that.
Bill Bender does a great job, College Football Insider over at the Sporting News. Catch his work there. Bill, always appreciate it, my friend. Have yourself a great weekend. Enjoy the college football.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
Bill Bender hanging out with us on the show. All right, we'll come back. Kurt Heel and Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com will join us. Quick timeout. Don't go anywhere. Lots more to do as we continue on this Thursday edition of The Cash-In. All right, good to have you with us on this Thursday edition of The Cash-In. Had to take a quick time out there in between conversations with Bill Bender, who does a great job with the Sporting News, and our good friend Kurt Heelan, who stops by the show. Of course, Kurt, you can catch him over on NBCSports.com. Pro Basketball Talk is his jam. There he is in full color, the great Kurt Heelan. Well, I mean, look, I guess the Bucks had been kind of sort of sitting there under the surface with all the talk of Toronto and obviously Damian Lillard wanting to go to Miami, Kurt. How surprised were you at the headline when it came out yesterday?
Pretty surprised. I mean, the Bucks name had been mentioned on the periphery, but I had heard nothing about them having real traction towards this. And not only had I not heard anything, but just internally, I'm like, and I could put like Drew Holiday in a deal, right? Like, yeah, I don't see how this comes together. And it turns out they'll put Drew Holiday in a deal. And yeah, I got to say, this one caught me off guard. This was a surprise, especially when I looked, all the talk for the week had been about Toronto and would they have to go back to Miami now and try to write, you know, figure out a deal. I didn't see this one coming.
It just goes to show you, though, sometimes people can keep secrets because even the great Woj, all these guys that make the NBA their living, yourself included, nobody saw this coming. And then all of a sudden, it was there. And boy, it is a blockbuster of blockbusters. To me, everybody wins in this. And there are very few deals where you feel like everybody wins, but it really does feel like everybody wins. I mean, the Suns get Nurkic, Grayson Allen, Nasir Little, Keon Johnson. The Blazers get a haul of draft picks later on in the decade. And it's so funny to watch teams now who have given up so much of their draft capital that have to essentially start giving stuff away towards the end of the decade. I mean, it's only 2023 and we're talking about draft picks in 2029, 2028, 2030. I mean, it's kind of crazy.
The Bucks, I mean, then this is how all in the Bucks are. They now no longer have full control over their own draft picks for the rest of the decade. They are all in as it gets, which is frankly kind of what they had to do to keep Giannis Antetokounmpo. And he had dropped plenty of hints that he wanted out. People I talked to around the league saw it almost as a foregone conclusion that he didn't see how this team was going to pivot and win. This makes it hard. This team, for the next two seasons at least, and then three if Lillard can keep it up, you know, there's a decline coming. But for two or three years, this team is top of the East contenders.
What do they lose? But what do they lose defensively? I mean, Holiday is a big loss defensively. You know, Grayson Allen was a pest on the defensive end of the floor, one of those guys. I mean, they're losing some stuff here defensively. Yeah, they're going to be able to score, but are they going to be able to D up?
I think that that's an issue, but what you're banking on, and frankly, this, if I were a betting man, I would seriously look at, I don't know what the odds are, but Brooke Lopez is Defensive Player of the Year. He got serious consideration last year. You've got him and Giannis kind of fighting for stuff, but he's going to have to stop some stuff in the paint now that he didn't have to before. Jrue Holiday was their best perimeter defender. You're counting on Middleton being better and the back line of Giannis and Brooke Lopez solving your problems for a couple years. And that's probably, look, their defense takes a step back. Their biggest problem, Jason, and we saw it when they fell to Miami. Now, granted, Giannis was hurt during that, but their problem has been in the playoffs. They're not a good half-court offense when it really slows down and tightens up. And they won a championship because Chris Middleton was at his peak running the pick and roll. He hasn't been quite the same since the injury. Dame solves their biggest problem. Dame just solves that going away. They definitely get better. They should be, frankly, they won 58 games last year. They were already at the top of the contender chart. But their defense gets a little worse. But I don't know. Don't you feel like this is sort of Denver in the sense of like, yeah, the defense isn't great. Doesn't have to be. Their offense is just so good.
Yeah, it's very true. Kurt Halen hanging out with us, pro basketball talk at NBCSports.com here on the Cash-In on this Thursday with Damian Lillard having been dealt. There's no chance that Lillard pulls a no, but I want to play in Miami here, right? I mean, there's no way he's going to pull that stunt now, right?
No, in fact, he's already, I guess, hinted that or said through his agent, like, no, I'm good with this. This was a guy he wanted to play with. And if you want to chase a ring, frankly, this is better than Miami, isn't it? Like, I mean, Jimmy Butler is Jimmy Butler, and I love Bam Adebayo, and obviously this team went to the finals last year. But you're counting on Butler being healthy. You need some breaks, and I'm not sure that peak Heat, even with Lillard, was better than peak Bucks, or certainly the wild card out there still is. Do you know what peak Celtics is going to look like with Porzingis? Because like that, it could be really good, or not quite as good. But if it's really good, I don't know that it would have been enough. So
be a fun Easter. Let's get them both healthy into the Eastern Conference Finals, because I think that'd be a really entertaining NBA Eastern Conference Final.
Would there be anything, by the way, kind of as amusing as the Heat still pushing or beating the Bucks?
is Jimmy Butler crying sour grapes here with the whole tampering thing? Is the NBA going to look into this at all?
They might, but honestly, who doesn't? First off, who doesn't tamper? Like, I find the tampering thing, but my favorite stat from Sports Track, who follows these things.
Oh, they're great. I love Spot Track. Yeah.
Spot Track. I want to call them Sports
Track. Yeah, it's all right.
Spot Track. They tracked it. 73 guys signed in the first 24 hours of free agency this year. But there's no tampering in the NBA. Nobody was talking before those 24 hours. There's no.
It all just happened right as soon as they start. Exactly. It makes me laugh too, because I used Spot Track yesterday because I was talking about Jimmy Butler complaining about having to fill up his gas tank and his Rolls Royce for $145 and complaining about it and just getting hammered for it on social, as he should. You know, he just signed a 3-year, $145 million deal or whatever it was.
Yeah, they Keith Smith and the guys over there do an amazing job. I just think this is the best thing for Lillard. If he wants a ring and that to round out his legacy, there is no better place to do it. Doesn't it feel like they're going to get one of the next two? It kind of feels like they should. I mean, you never know.
Nothing's a given, man.
Man, the Jets are going to be great this year.
Exactly. How about for Phoenix, though? You know, we were talking about what are they going to put around this, you know, this threesome they have there. They part ways with Ayton, which was obviously, I think they feel like, is addition by subtraction. And they bring in these other pieces and guys that they hope can sort of play these complementary roles around their big three there. Give me some thoughts on what Phoenix added here.
I think I've still called a little neutral just because Nurkic is a big drop off from Ayton. And he's just, remember a couple of years ago, I think just before the pandemic, he had the compound leg fracture.
Yeah.
He's never been quite the player he was before, but he is a big body who knows how to be in the paint. If he can be at all mobile and stay healthy, he plays defense just by being big in the paint, right? Like that, there's a value to that. But what they really get, like you said, they get depth and shooting. And I'm not sure about Keon Johnson, if he can crack that rotation, we'll see. But Nasir Little absolutely can. Grayson Allen, like, they've added quality shooting to this roster and some depth, which is what they need, because they're going to win a lot of regular season games just with Durant and Booker and Beal. But they need to round out. And if nothing else, Nurkic is an innings eater, right? He just gets them through the regular season.
Yeah, he certainly does. Rounded out with Portland. You know, look, I think they did about as well as they could possibly do, given the circumstances. You know, they get a huge draft pick haul, as we mentioned. They add some pieces. And now, look, for better or worse, it's Scoot Henderson's team, and this is his time.
And Anfernee Simons and Shaedon Sharpe, like, they've got really athletic young guys there, and you really did need to turn the page and just turn them loose, right? And by the way, Ayton fits with them. He's only 25. He's on the timeline. He's incredibly athletic. He gives them he wanted more touches. He wanted a bigger role in the offense. He should get that now. But yeah, they get this. Plus, let's not forget, they're going to get one or two more picks and another young player or something back in the Jrue Holiday flip. Mm-hmm. Like, there is more to come with this deal for them. And it's funny, when I did winners and losers, I left them as TBD, but kind of a winner. Like, I like this deal for them, but the real value comes with whatever they end up flipping, you know, whether it's to Miami or the Clippers, or there's the Boston thing just doesn't work. I know it's out there. Philly, how about a three-way? We'll take, and I think Jake Fisher put this out there. Jrue Holiday to Philly, Harden to the Clippers, everybody sends picks to Portland.
I like it.
It could work. Yeah, we'll see.
Is this Harden thing going to ever get resolved, or is this, it just is what it is right now?
First off, did you see the video from yesterday?
Yes.
I want to get invited to his parties. Like, he's off the hook, but like, an invite to those parties. I don't know. I think it's going to get messy and ugly. And we just mentioned a trade that's kind of a long shot.
Yeah.
There's no other good. That's still maybe the best answer on the table. Nobody wants a piece of this right now. And he's got to show up to camp for CBA reasons. So this is just going to be, it's a nasty divorce at this point, isn't it? Between him and Frank.
Really? It really is. But go back to Jrue Holiday real quick. Do you think that trade happens sooner rather than later?
I think that, yes, they would. I don't know that it happens before camp opens next week, but within the next couple of weeks. Yeah, I think a week or two, it happens pretty quickly. And by the way, just for you cap nerds out there, he can't be, Portland can't aggregate him with anything. It has to be only Holiday going out in this trade under the CBA rules. So it's Holiday is the only part of this. But yeah, I still think they get it done. He's a lot of contenders that could use him.
By the way, NBA Finals betting right now, Milwaukee plus 360 to win it all, Boston plus 500, Phoenix plus 550, Denver Nuggets plus 650, the Lakers plus 1,200, fifth best odds, Golden State plus 1,700. How are the Lakers fifth best odds? I don't get it.
Lakers Nation. But but the Warriors, look, the Warriors, if everything goes right, but that seems like longer odds on Denver.
But here's the thing. I keep saying this. I love the Warriors just from a value standpoint.
Yeah, exactly.
I love the Warriors at plus 1,700.
Yeah. They are, look, they and the Lakers to a degree, they both fall. I've started working on my tiers, which aren't going to come out till like days before the season starts. But when I started putting teams there, I've got them in my second tier of contenders. The things have to really go right for them.
I said it though. If everything goes right, they could still win a championship with this team. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Before I let you go, anybody going to sign Dwight Howard?
Taiwan? No, no, I don't think so.
Instead of Cancun, when teams lose at the end of the year, every time we mention Dwight Howard, we're just going to say Taiwan.
Exactly, pretty much. he's not a terrible player. I don't want to like knock out, like he's still got, but if your teams fill that last spot with younger guys and guys who aren't going to be a distraction, and Howard is neither of those things at this point.
Yeah, fair enough. That is the great Kurt Heelan, Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com. Are you still doing the podcast in the offseason or what?
It's slowed down and it's changed a little, but it will be back pretty soon, including talking with some people out of Portland because, you know, I think they might be a story.
Good stuff. Kurt, always appreciate it, my friend. Be well.
Take care.
Kurt Heelan hanging out with us today. All right, Sam Yarnell is on the other side. Stay with us. The cashing continues on this Thursday. Good to have you with us. Good to have you with us on this Thursday edition of the Cash In Podcast. I should call it a vodcast because it really is a vodcast. Podcast doesn't do it justice. Rarity that we do two guests in one show, but I felt the need to because I wanted to get the college football in with Bill Bender and, of course, the NBA stuff with Kurt Heelan on the big trade out of Portland. We were just talking about the odds on the Blazers, or odds on the Bucks rather, coming out of this deal. And if we're going to talk odds, we got to bring in our man Sam Yarnell, who hangs out with us every day here on the show, except yesterday when he was broken down on the side of the road hoping to not get eaten by like a grizzly in Virginia somewhere. Hi, Sam. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
Great to be back, Jason. I think you might need to make a road trip out here to Virginia and see the wildlife we have, because there definitely aren't that many grizzly bears along the I-95 corridor in central Virginia. But who knows?
You know, my brother would be thrilled if I came out there. He's in Fredericksburg. He's been trying to get me to go out there since they moved there a few years ago. I haven't made it out there though.
Home of the Fredericksburg Nationals.
Yeah, the Fredericks. Are they the Keys still? Are they still the Keys or
no.
are they
no? Oh. So that's Frederick, Maryland.
Oh, okay. Frederick Keys.
Fredericksburg. Okay. Fredericksburg is in Virginia.
You don't need to talk to me like I'm a fourth grader. A fourth grader might actually know the answer to that. So fair enough. That was fun. Good stuff. So anyway. Kurt Heelan, thanks to him for chatting with us for a few. And he agrees with me, by the way, on the Warriors being a great value bet at plus 1,700.
Listen.
That's a good value bet. If everything breaks right, that team can win. I'm telling you.
Right. And we had this discussion a couple of weeks ago, right? Like if Steph Curry can play like his, you know.
Our job is to give value, though. That is a value pick. Picking Milwaukee at plus 250 is not a good pick because you're not getting anything for it.
I haven't even broken into NBA odds, but like off the top of my head, right? There are other teams I would put in
Celtics
front of the
Warriors. Celtics plus 500, Phoenix plus 550, Nuggets plus 650, Lakers plus 1200.
Oh my goodness. What are we doing? It's someone out of the Western Conference besides the Warriors. It's either the Suns, the Nuggets, or the Lakers. I could go with any one.
You like
one
Sacramento
of those
too
three.
At plus 5000 if I remember too.
I thought that was the value play before the Warriors was my thing, because really Sacramento, they proved last year, right? They're a playoff team. If we're talking about everything breaking right, which team is the best value? It's the Kings. It's not the Warriors.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, done with the NBA for the day. Still to come in the show, we'll give our Thursday Night Football picks, a game that Sam is really thrilled to talk about, by the way. He is so excited. Look at the joy in his face when I just bring up the Thursday Night Amazon Prime game. Look at him. He looks so happy. That is the happiest looking guy in the world. So we'll get to that coming up. But I got to lean into this a little bit. Oh, God. We used to do the radio version of this show every night. And we were on in Houston. And our headquarters was in Houston. So I had to deal with the Astros fans. Oh, I had to deal with you every night. And last night, and look, nobody has been more complimentary of the Astros this year than I have. For this team to even be in the mix to make the postseason, much less win a division, is remarkable considering the injuries they have endured to that rotation. Altuve at the beginning of the year, Alvarez during the year, Abreu started off the year slow. They can't get anything out of the catcher spot offensively. I mean, this team overcame so much. And I actually had turned a little and said, you know what, man, give this team credit for what it's done this year. And then Hector Neris goes out last night and blows the whole thing. Here it is.
Got him on three pitches. Ran the splitter in on him. Julio strikes out. Neris strikes out the side, and he strands Crawford. Watch out now. Here comes Neris talking to Julio. And everybody's emptied out. Bullpen start to empty. This is one of a number of times something like this has happened. Now, Eugenio Suarez having some pretty firm words. Manny Acton trying to move him back. Both sides finding some distance now. Watch Neris here. He goes right after him like this. That's what it's about. Wow.
Yeah, that is uncalled for. They get away with a lot of stuff in this game, but that right there is uncalled for.
When have you ever seen something like that? Boy, that's the emotion of the moment, just taking over a guy too much.
I mean, seriously, what are you doing, Hector Neris? Now, everybody's going to come at me and say, you're just hating on the Astros. You don't like Houston. They hate us because they ain't us. They don't like us because we win championships and all of that. First of all, I can give you lots of teams that win championships that nobody hates. So stop. I can run through a long list and you'll look like an idiot. That's first of all. Secondly, I want to give you this. Teams represent cities. Fan bases represent cities. For those of you in Houston that have been coming at me on X out of your parents' basement, for those of you that have been coming after me, just think about how you represent Houston. Just think about how people, and there's been a ton of it. You just go look on my X feed at the back page and how these people have come at me, which, by the way, I really couldn't care less. I could not care less about what Astro fans think of me, what you think of me in Houston. I just don't care, which is why, if you've noticed, I think I replied to one person out of all the replies. I replied to one person because it was a fellow journalist and their take was just idiotic. But to me, if I'm a fan of Houston, if I'm a resident of Houston, I'm disgusted by what I saw last night. I don't care that Julio Rodriguez hit a home run off Neris last year and rounded the bases and showboated a little bit. Guys do that every day in baseball. Guys do it every day. You know what Julio Rodriguez didn't do as he rounded the bases? He didn't walk towards Hector Neris. He didn't cross home plate and go out towards Hector Neris and try to stick it in his face. No, he ran around the bases and got excited. So Hector Neris strikes him out of here. Could you imagine? I want you to think about this for a second. Boy, you want to talk about living rent-free in somebody's head. Because that's the other comment I see from asshat fans down there in Houston. I get this response of, oh, see, we're living rent-free in your heads. You know who was living rent-free in Hector Neris's head ever since that home run? Julio Rodriguez. Because Hector Neris hung on to that for a long time. And then when he finally got his revenge, he struck out the great Julio Rodriguez. What did he do? He walks towards him. Then I'll do you one better. And then I'll let Sam jump in on this because I know he's got something to say about it. I'll do you one better. Neris walks towards him and then walks away because he don't want any of that smoke from Julio Rodriguez, who was like, is this really happening? And I think once it hit Julio, Julio was ready to throw down. And then Neris goes and hides behind all his teammates who come pouring out of the dugout and out of the bullpens, and everybody kisses and shoves and hugs and talks to each other about where they're going for dinner later. And then Neris comes out of the dugout. That's my favorite part, by the way. Neris comes out of the dugout after the fact. After everybody's in between them all, then he's the tough guy who comes out of the dugout. So spare me the whole, you know, it's because teams don't like us. It's because, you know, fans don't like us. No, to me, it's about how do you want to be represented as a city? And if you're a Houston Astros fan, if you want to be, you know, they want to play. Everybody wants to be the villain. Everybody wants to be the heel. Now, and now Astro fans are, we're going to embrace. We're going to lean into the idea that we're the bad guys. We're the heel. You don't have a choice but to lean into it if you're a fan of this team because you are the bad guys. Go ahead, Sam.
Listen, I think the prevailing thing for me as somebody who played baseball my entire life from age 5 through the end of my college experience, the biggest thing to me was, oh my God, how embarrassing is this for Hector Neris? Because this is a guy who's been in Major League Baseball since 2014, right? This is his 10th season in the big leagues. And he thinks that it's his place, by the way, not a 10th season, multiple time All-Star, multiple time Reliever of the Month. He won Reliever of the Month one time in his career. His career ERA is above 3. For a reliever, he's one-time World Series champion with the Astros last season. You know what his ERA was last season? It was above 3. His whip was also above 1. He's never contributed to a meaningful team. And here he is walking off the mound towards one of the budding young superstars.
Forget budding. He already is a superstar.
No, because he's still young. He's still young. You can't do that. Let's not put that tag on Julio too early. He's still budding. He's no Juan Soto. We'll just say that. But you know, Jason, I don't have the same animosity towards as the Houston viewers of the pod know, right? I keep their stadium right above my shoulder every single day. I got a picture of their stadium right there. Right there. And then I got a ball signed by one of the most famous Astros moment participants right here, right? I got my Howie Kendrick ball right here because I know Astros fans love him. No love lost for Houston. Embarrassing moment for Hector Neris, a guy who's in his, count him, 10th MLB season, walking towards a guy who's in his second, barking at him as if he needs to assert his dominance over a 22-year-old, 21-year-old.
Every time I sit here and watch the video again of it and I see Hector walking off the field and then coming back out like he's some tough guy when there's 70 people between him and Julio Rodriguez, I'm just like, come on, man. Talk about Hector Fugazi. Neris. Talk about Fugazi. My God.
Hector Neris is 34 years old. Julio Rodriguez is 22 years old.
Yeah.
Hector Neris was in 7th grade when Julio Rodriguez was born, and he thinks that he has the place, the standing to walk off. You know how many people I've seen wearing a Hector Neris jersey ever? Phillies or Astros? I can count him on zero hands. Zero. Ridiculous. Yeah. Ridiculous. Know your role. Know your place.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. It's great that you struck him out in a big spot.
Yeah.
Do whatever you want.
I wouldn't even care if it was a fist pump or I wouldn't even care.
Do it towards your own dugout.
The thing that drives me nuts is, and I've never seen anything like this, literally walking towards him. It's the final out of the inning. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
Know your place. Just know your place.
Some self-awareness. Something like that. And I'll throw one last thing on this, and then we'll go into the other stuff I want to get into with you. I'll tell you who's pissed. No, this will not come out because a lot of teams are good at keeping this stuff in-house. The guys in that locker room who play with him, they're pissed. And you know why? Because next year, they can't throw a Hector Neris or Neris or whatever his name. They can't throw at him because he didn't hit. But you know what? Somebody on the Astros next year is going to get it, and they're going to get it because of what Hector Neris did. And trust me, I have been in a million Major League Baseball locker rooms. I've interviewed a ton of players over the years. They do not like when a pitcher does that because a pitcher doesn't have to come up and hit. A pitcher doesn't have to come up and face the music for what they do. But those guys on the Astros who have to come to the plate, one of them's going to get it. And they're only going to have Hector Neris to blame for that. So,
well, listen, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. We don't need to think all the way to 2024. Actually, let's back this up just a little bit. What happens if these two teams meet in the playoffs? Now the Mariners, they've got that fire lit. And oh my goodness, the Astros have literally made this mistake before. They did it in the 2019 World Series. They're going to throw Neris out there against the Mariners, and he's going to melt down. And it's going to be exactly like Will Harris in the 2019 World Series. So, I mean, tale as old as time for Houston. I apologize in advance to the fans for when that happens. Should the Mariners make the playoffs? I don't know, man. The Mariners, they're not doing too hot right now. They might not make the playoffs.
I'm just laughing.
But if they do,
yeah.
That'd be wild.
I'm just sitting here laughing because, yeah, my timeline on it's just nonstop. And just some of the stuff. Jason, remember when Julio did almost the same bleep when he hit a two-run home run? No, he didn't do the same thing. He did not run out towards Hector Neris after he hit a home run. He did not actively try to provoke some sort of altercation with Hector after he hit his home run. Stop. Stop. Stop trying to, like, gaslight this thing. Stop. Your guy was in the wrong. Why can't fans just say when their guys are in the wrong? I have no problem saying, you know, that Domingo Germán should never be a New York Yankee again. I have no problem crushing the Yankees when they do something stupid. Why can't Astros fans, why can't fan bases? It just blows my mind, the fan goggles view of things. Like, I've never been that guy. And I'm sure some of these people are like grown men. Not just, you know, 22 and 23-year-olds. No offense.
I was going to say.
No offense. You're very mature for your years. We get all that. You're not every 22 and 23-year-old.
Dodging strays out here.
I know. But to me, it just blows my mind. I'm not going to lie. I tweet and post a lot of things on X. And some things get response, some things don't. I was shocked at the level of vitriol from Astros fans and that most of them were just like, yeah, we own it. Party on, dude. That's why you're Houston. That's why you're Houston.
Listen, at the end of the day, those of us on, maybe this is only us 22 and 23-year-olds, but those of us on baseball Twitter, on actual baseball Twitter, not just our individual team Twitters, Astro fans, those of us who are actually involved in baseball Twitter, whenever the fan rankings come out, right, and the tier lists come out and people are, you know, national outlets are like, these are the how we rank fans and that kind of thing. there's a reason the Astros are always towards the bottom, man. They're just like, their fans are way too online and way too mad all the time. And I get it. I get it. Like, I do. They've been through the ringer. Don't get me wrong. And this is where I will go a little bit against the team and the fans and the city are all grouped together, because I will say that the organization, not Houston Astro fans, mm-hmm. right? The organization from Alex Cora to the GM that came over from the Cardinals and stole all that data and stuff. Yeah. All of the people in that front office put the fan base in a horrible spot. I felt right. Cause as a fan of many teams myself, right, that are bad, and have gone through some terrible storylines, the Taylor Hall jersey right here. It's a really hard spot to be in when you're that online, and Astros fans have always been that online. So then when they had to kind of defend this thing that the Astros did, they had to, right? There was no other choice. What are you going to do? Find another team, go to the Rangers? Ew. The organization put them in a very tough spot. Now, they've put themselves in tougher spots as time's gone on, but I don't blame Astros fans for being as mad online as they are.
All right, Sam gets the last word on that. Astros fans, keep it coming, man. Knock yourselves out. You want to sit there and go down with, you know, with Hector Neris behaving that way last night and say that's okay. I always marvel, by the way, even if you want to make the argument, I can't get off this. Even if you want to make the argument that what Julio Rodriguez did was so egregious when he hit this home run off of Neris, even if you want to go that route, what is it saying that where we are in a society it is, well, they did it, so it's okay if we did it. Could you, and so I guarantee you some of these people have children. Do you think any of them would say that to their kids? You think anyone would say, well, yeah, somebody did that. Yeah, you should go and do the same thing. Like, it's just, it's a societal thing. I know my head goes in a million different directions when I see this stuff. All right, enough with the Astros. That's about as much oxygen as I want to give them tonight. And look, they may be in the postseason, and it'll be fun to watch. I would love, I don't think there's a much of a path for them and the Mariners to get in, though. Maybe if the Mariners sweep the Rangers, they can both get in. Cause God, I would kill to see that postseason matchup. Please give me those two teams in the postseason. All right, I'm done. NFL. Yeah. Well, go ahead, Sam.
Well, just I got to get this in because it kind of just came out, and I'll bet you haven't seen it yet. But staying on the subject of baseball scumbags, do you see what Curt Schilling did this time?
Oh, God. Curt Schilling, who has blocked me on X, by the way. Badge of honor. Thank you.
Oh, he hasn't blocked me, but yesterday on his podcast, he revealed
that he's a Nazi? Oh, no. Okay. Sorry.
After. Okay. He revealed against Tim Wakefield and his wife's wishes that Tim Wakefield has brain cancer.
Oh, no.
And he didn't want the information getting out. And Curt Schilling went and said something on his podcast about it.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, thoughts are with Tim Wakefield. Just the worst. Super fun worst. Pitcher to watch. Great human being. But, yeah, Curt Schilling, what are you doing?
He just wants to be. Some people want to be the heel, like I said. Some people want to be reviled, and there'll be a certain segment of the population that still likes the heel. If you watch wrestling, you know what I'm referencing. There are some people that just love to root for the bad guy. And in this case, for Curt Schilling, that's, you know, people on the far right politically in this country. They just think Curt Schilling's been oppressed. All right, let me go to the NFL, because we've got the Thursday night game tonight. Why are you so angry? Why are you so upset? Why are you so melancholy? It's my word of the day. When it comes to the Lions and Packers. Lions -2.5 in Green Bay, 134 on the money line. If you want Detroit, +114. If you want the Packers, 45.5 is the total. On FanDuel Sportsbook, the unofficial sportsbook of the cash-in. Unofficial, why? They don't pay us. Okay, Sam. Tell me why you're so angsty and unhappy about this game.
I just think it's a rat line, man. Like, you're giving me two key numbers right off the bat. Don't have to tease it anyway. It's just tough. And, like, this game screams over to me the way that Jordan Love has played early in his, you know, career as a Packers starter, as the Packers QB1. And the way that Lions offense has looked this year makes me want to take the over. But it's a Thursday night game, and we know the story with Thursday night games. They're always dumpster fires. They always go under. And this is a perfectly reasonable number for it to go over. I have nothing to say about this game. I don't know what to do with it. I just don't. I could see either thing happening, right? I could see Packers and under. I could see Lions and over. I could see Lions and under. Packers and over. This game could go so many ways. I'm only going to invest in props for this one.
I'll give you a prop I like. Jordan Love over 227.5.
I was thinking more in the market of Jordan Love over 20.5 completions at +102. Jordan Love over.
How about the rushing yards? How about the rushing yards? 16.5? Running for his life?
That's under the predication that Hutchinson will get into the backfield pretty quickly, right? And I don't think do we know Bakhtiari's status? Is he definitely out for this game or definitely in? Have they said yet? That would depend a lot on his rushing yards to me, because that Packers O-line has really struggled when David Bakhtiari's been out, you know, last season, example one, right? But
Bakhtiari's been ruled out.
Yeah, okay. So makes me a little more think that he's going to be running for his life.
Maybe I like not the, so much on the I pass like the attempts. Over. I like the over on his passing yards. I like the over on his rushing yards. Yeah. They get Christian Watson back tonight too, don't they?
I believe so. They haven't come out with the final injury report with the game. It's too early.
Yeah, I think we'll Watson's
get that in a couple of hours.
I think Watson's going to play. Yeah, I like the way he's gelling with that offense. I really do. Yeah, Watson expected to play according to Packers Wire. I think Green Bay's going to win.
Aaron Jones is supposed to play too.
I'll tell you what. I'll take Green Bay on the money line. I think they're going to win the game. I think they're going to win outright. I'll take them with the points. I'll take them with the money line. I'm like Dr. Seuss. I'll take it in a hat. I'll take it in a boat. Take it in a plane. On a train. I feel really strong about Green Bay. The more I sit here and talk through it, you're kind of getting into my actual thinking as I'm sitting here talking about it. I love Green Bay tonight. Because Detroit's going to have some bumps in the road with this thing. Everybody just thinks they were going to flip a switch this year and go from being a 500 team last year to suddenly everything was going to click this year and they're going to be – I'm not there yet. I think Detroit's going to be good. I think they'll be a playoff team. But I've been impressed with what I've seen out of Green Bay in the early going. I'll take Green Bay plus the points. I don't like the total. I think the total's going to be I think the total is literally a coin flip. I think it's a difficult bet. But I will go Jordan Love over 227.5, Jordan Love over 16.5. Bang, let's go.
So
my pick is official. We are locked in. Come on. Give me some of that.
I think my pick is going to be A.J. Dillon under 40.5 rushing yards.
You're so boring.
How is that boring? Here's the logic, right? And this is exactly why I don't trust a side of the total in this game. Or quite frankly, a side on the spread, right? Like, the Detroit run defense is electric. No one runs on Detroit. Another reason, like, that's the only way Jordan Love's getting over his rushing prop is if he scrambles for 17 yards. When the pocket collapses. The Detroit run defense is very fun to watch. I don't see how. See, and I might go under in the game. I really might. Like, I'm talking myself more and more into this under.
Okay.
I think Jahmyr Gibbs still can't quite figure it out. I think Yeah. I'll go under. Under 40. What is it? 45 and a half. Yeah. I'll take the under. I could see a 21-10. I could see a 21-10. Yep. Sold. Under.
So you're going under and AJ Dillon under 40 and a half?
Yeah.
Those are your two picks. Under on the game and under 40 and a half on AJ Dillon.
Vote of no confidence in myself.
Yeah, no, these aren't our official, you know, like our Friday picks or anything like that. But how we feel about tonight's game.
Oh, rough weekend left for me last week.
Well, you were two. For Page versus the Prince, we both went 2-2.
I know. No. That's what I mean. Otherwise, it was a great weekend for me at the look at the Bills, and I altered up the Bills up the ladder. It was a great weekend for me at the book. But for Page versus the Prince, I mean, 2-2. We can't be giving the viewers 500, Jason. We got to be better than that.
No, but it's a progression. And it's tough. To me, it's tough to pick early in the season because you don't know what teams are. And I'll say it again. Teams don't know they suck early in the year. Teams play above their head. So it's very challenging. If you're just talking, I'm just talking about picking totals and spreads. I'm not talking about the alt bets, you know, the rushing props, things like that. I'm just talking about the casual bettor. Win, lose, spread, total. It's challenging to pick early in the year. It is. Because I say it every year because you don't know what you have early in the year in some of these teams. Atlanta's 2-0. Oh my God. Tampa Bay's 2-0 in the first two games. And then we get to week three and we're like, oh, okay. Now we see what you really are. The mask has come off. We see who you really are. It's like that. It's like the end of a Scooby-Doo episode and they pull the mask off. Oh my God, it's Old Man Richards. You kind of start to figure out what teams are. Now you're going to, now the facade is starting to come down. We're going to start finding out who some of these teams are as we get into week four.
I just feel like as you get deeper into the season, the book catches up more and the lines get harder, but that's just me.
Yeah, but everybody's getting smarter. We're all getting smarter as we go through the year. And I still say, I'll still maintain it every year. Every week, the book gets one game horribly wrong. Horribly wrong. All right, you got anything on the Ryder Cup or do you want to hold it? What's the matter? You're looking, did something just happen that we're going to get a live reaction to something?
Yeah, you are. I'm scrolling the FanDuel Sportsbook, and I see this tab called Kelce Specials. Top of the charts, Travis Kelce to have the most receiving yards in the game. Seeing red, Chiefs to win by 22+. Opening act, Travis Kelce, first touchdown scorer. Running away together. Chiefs to have 150+ total rushing yards.
Really?
Seemingly ranch. Travis Kelce, last TD scorer. Plot twist. Zach Wilson to have 300 passing yards, which is 18-1.
FanDuel? You know what? Hats off to FanDuel.
That's great marketing towards all of the Swifties.
Brilliant. It's positively brilliant. And again, I don't make a dime from FanDuel. So, yeah, other than if I play a game or something, I don't get paid by them. I think that is brilliant. It's smart. Lean into it, man.
You get paid when I give out winners. By the way, hope you tailed on the Bears under 5.5 wins this season when we got it at -105 2 weeks ago. Looking great. The Bears are terrible.
I'm curious to know what the number is on the Broncos now. What's the number on the Broncos?
Coming.
Win total. I got it here in front of me too. It is 5.5 now. More likely to get over 5.5. The Bears or the Broncos? It's gotta be the Broncos. Well, what's Chicago now? Let's see. Chicago's 5.5. I would still hammer the under on that, even at -170 with the juice. I'd still hammer that.
I saved you 65 cents of juice when I told you 2 weeks ago, or last week.
Yeah. It's you. You're the juice saver.
I'm the juice saver. That's what they call me. The juicer.
You are the juice saver. All right, I'm going to go. We're not talking about the Ryder Cup. We already ran long today because of my interviews and clock management and all that stuff. So I figure
we'll get into the Ryder Cup with live betting after round one tomorrow.
I like that. I like that.
Because it starts at 2 a.m. Eastern. Oh, that's 11 p.m. 11 p.m. for me. You just have to stay up late. That's nice.
That's not happening because I have to get up at 6 a.m. to start preparing for this thing. That's not happening. You got to win some money so you can fix that car that broke down yesterday.
I was going to say.
Did you have a thumb out? Did you thumb it? No. I would love to see you hitchhiking. Get into some guy's pickup truck. He's got like a Rottweiler in the back seat. Hey, son, where I got to take you? How about we come spend the night at my place?
I'd call an Uber.
I got a bunch of mannequins in the attic. I want you to take a look. It's going to do it for us. Bill Bender, Sporting News. Thank you, sir. Kurt Halen, Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com. We love you, Kurt. Sam Yarnell. Paige versus the Prince tomorrow. Who knows what else? That's the cash-in for this Thursday, September 28th, 2023. Like, subscribe, check out the podcast on all your favorite podcasting platforms. Watch us here every day, noon Eastern. X, Twitch, JasonPage77 on Twitch, Facebook, and YouTube as well. We'll see you tomorrow.